It's time to find balance and be refreshed here on Every Heart, Every Woman.
Every heart, every woman.
Get ready for uplifting music and inspiring interviews.
Every heart, every woman.
Let's get motivated to move forward as we share our life experiences. Host, Carla Nivens.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Before we jump into our interview for today, and we've got a great one, we're going to set the tone for our show with some live music. Sit back and enjoy.
When sorrows are like sea billows roar, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well.
Let this blessed assurance control that Christ has regarded my helpless estate. And has shed his own blood for my soul. It is well.
It is well
with my soul.
Well, it is well with
Hi, welcome back. My name is Carla Nivens. I am your host for the Every Heart, Every Woman radio show on The Word 100.7 FM. And I have my good friend Vicki McMurray with me. She is co-hosting today. Thank you so much, Vicki, for being here.
Thank you. I'm excited today.
We have been laughing.
Yes, we have.
Trying to get into this show because we have our good friend Tova Cito with us. And Tova is a Christian speaker, and she is an author, and she is a mom and a Bible study leader. And so we have so much to just chat about. So, Tova, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me. Love you and Vicki.
We love you too.
Yes.
We love you too. So before we get in the show, I just want to tell everyone that Every Heart, Every Woman radio show is a program of Love Ministries. Love Ministries is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. You can find more information on Love Ministries at their website, loveministriesbuilds.org. And I guess we want to go right into Tova. Vicki, do you want to...
Sure. Well, we've known Tova for quite a while. I met you right towards the end of your time as the youth pastor at church, mm-hmm. and really kind of got to know you when we did that women's retreat.
Yep.
That Carla
so
and I
fun.
Had to share a room.
Yes, we... Oh, my God. Okay, we won't tell this.
No. I think we should.
It's a problem with having friends on this radio.
Right. See, I told you all, we've been laughing too much.
We have been laughing too much. We have to get to the meat of this. But
yes.
So anyway, just kind of got to know you a little bit from that and heard a teeny tiny bit about your story. And you've just really dealt with a lot of grief in your life and sadness and things that, honestly, as a mom myself, I can't even fathom walking through, honestly. And you've done it graciously, at least publicly.
Yeah.
And you love the Lord ferociously, which is so inspiring to me. And you're just a cool person all around.
That's true.
And you have three beautiful children you adopted, which we could separately just do a whole show about the adoption process and the beauty that has come out of those three adoptions. But I think today we kind of wanted to talk about, because you have a brand new book that I have read called Borrowed Courage.
Yep.
And we don't want to spill the beans on everything in the book, because I do want sweet people out there that are listening to buy Tova's book. It will be worth your time and money. But it just to give everyone a snippet of what your walk has been like that has gotten you to this point, for you to have written this book would just be an honor for us to be able to talk to you about today.
Well, I'm happy to share it. I feel like, for years people would say, you got to tell your story. I felt like it was a lot of self-promotion because it was my story.
Mm-hmm.
And so it didn't feel right. But I mean, literally one night I was asleep, and I don't know when or how the Lord speaks to you two, but the Lord speaks to me in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
And if I wake up, I know it's because he's got something to tell me. And I woke up out of a dead sleep, and I just heard, it's time. It's time to tell people what I've done in your life. And I knew that it was time to start to sit down and write. I've spoken in front of large groups. I've written, devotionals,
mm-hmm.
and
which I've read, and I used to sit with Marley and read at night and love your books.
Well, thank you. Well, I've always loved to write, and I've always loved to express God's grace and love, and I'm not afraid to share those things, but it just felt really scary to write my story. But like I said, I just felt like the Lord woke me up out of a dead sleep, and I didn't have a choice. So when I was young, people would just like they, like just like we ask kids today, what do you want to be when you grow up? People would always ask me, what do you want to be?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, I want to be a mom. Like I had no dreams of mm-hmm. being anything big or making any amount of money. I just wanted to be a mom. It was the only thing that I ever wanted. And so in 1999, I got married, and I'm so excited and, just absolutely felt like this was the start of all my dreams coming true. And shortly after, about 6 months after I was married, I I was pregnant. And so I was ecstatic. Mm-hmm. I was ecstatic. And, you know, I go to the doctor, everything looks great. And I was just super happy. Well, about 6 months in, I knew that I wasn't gaining a lot of weight, but I'm a smaller person, mm-hmm. and so it just didn't feel scary for me. I just mm-hmm. and I'd never been pregnant before, right. so I didn't know what right. was big and what was small, but people had commented, you know, God, you're small. Wait, you're 4 months. Wait, you're 5 months. So at 6 months, it got the doctor's attention, mm-hmm. and he said, "Hey, you know, you're measuring a little bit small. I'm sure everything's fine, but let's just get a sonogram." And so that afternoon, you know, they sent me to a place at Presby that nobody ever wants to go because it's where you get the special.
Exactly. Yes.
You know, you get the special sonogram. Mm-hmm. And so I walked in. My husband at the time was with me, and I could tell immediately, just because of the nurse and the doctor and how everything was going, that something wasn't right. And after about 10, 15 minutes of just silence and him, you know, probing around mm-hmm. in my stomach, and I was watching the monitor.
I can't even imagine. I mean, my brain would just be going in a million places.
Yeah. And mine was. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, because you can't make out. It all looks perfect. You know, I'm seeing a face.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this baby was perfect. Mm-hmm. And so he, you know, takes the jelly and the wand off my belly and covers me back up and says, you're going to need to sit up. And I said, what's wrong? And he said, your baby's heart is not developing right. Mm. And, you know, there's four chambers and the chambers weren't fully formed, weren't fully developed. They should have been further along at this point. Blood was pumping in places that it shouldn't be going. And so it was just dangerous. And he said, I mean, he was just blunt and honest. He had to be honest. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, your baby is not developing because of it. And the chances of you giving birth are slim.
And Tova, that would have been tough.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, it was the worst. So he said, if your baby makes it, which it's probably not going to make it. We found out that day it was a little girl. If your baby makes it, she's going to be born with a massive heart defect, and she's going to go right into surgery. And then the chances of her making it past that were going to be slim because she was going to be small.
Right.
So I just, you know, we just went home mm-hmm. with this news. And after we talked about it, we just decided, okay, we're not going to tell anybody because I was sad, Topher was sad, and I didn't want to deal with everybody else's sad. We had already had one baby shower at this point.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Mm-hmm. And our room was getting done, and mm-hmm. everyone was so excited. I was like one of the first people to get pregnant. I was 28 at the mm-hmm. time, and you know, everybody's starting that, but I was the first. Mm-hmm. And so, anyway, at 8 months, I went into labor, and my baby girl didn't make it. And so I had a stillborn, which, I mean, at the time, there was nothing like that had ever happened mm-hmm. to me or anybody that I knew.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, yes. It was devastating.
It's mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was mind-blowing mm-hmm. to have a something that's very much alive, and that, you know, you two have been mm-hmm. pregnant. You are falling in love with that baby.
Absolutely.
Yes, as it's growing in your belly, and you know, you're already kind of even dreaming about the personality based on,
oh, the kicks.
Yes.
And, oh, they're going to be a soccer player.
Yeah,
they're going to
be
this.
Feisty.
That's
or,
right.
Or you know.
That's right.
So. Your dreams start the day you find out you're pregnant.
It sure does.
And so all of those dreams were shattered, and it was devastating. But I was determined, you know, and I had faith. I would say that I God was very convenient mm-hmm. for me. God was, but I didn't know that. I thought, I mean, if somebody asked me, are you a Christian? I would have, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I love Jesus. I love the Lord. I know what he did for me. But I was very infant. My faith was very much in its infant stages. But I believed that God could do anything, and I believed that he could heal me from this and move me into the next, whatever was next. And mm-hmm. so I immediately got pregnant again. I was determined and I was excited. And so we kind of shut the door and moved forward. Mm-hmm. So I got pregnant in 2002. And then in January, so January 9th of 2003, I gave birth to Charlie. And that day to this day is the happiest day of my life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think a lot of moms, when they have that first baby, that is the happiest day.
Mm-hmm. It is. It was for me when I had my first daughter. It was, yeah. And I, very similar to you, all I wanted to be was a mom. Mm. I think I had different reasons after reading your book, kind of why I wanted to be a mom so badly. But I really wanted to be a mom, and I wanted to have a daughter. So, and I got that. Mm-hmm. Hasn't always been great, but
you got that times two.
But I got it. I got it times two. God really answers prayers.
That's
yes, he does.
But I can relate to those feelings, and I just don't want to say more because I've read your book.
You can.
But I just reading what you said about just that fierce love that you had for all of your children, but for when you had Charlie. Oh. I mean, I'm just, tears are streaming down my face as I'm reading your story, even though I knew some of it. It was just beautiful
and
painful,
you.
But beautiful. There's a lot of beauty in this. Well, I feel like I can say that even though I didn't walk that pain.
I would so agree with you. And I think that I think that I would miss a lot. If I didn't recognize the beauty, then I would only see the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I refuse to live in that.
Praise God.
Yeah. Well, because I had Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And, you know, he was just spectacular. And he was here,
mm-hmm.
and which was different right. than my first.
Previous.
Mm-hmm. And I'd also had a miscarriage in between. And so... but it was early, and Charlie was here,
mm-hmm.
and that was new, and he was perfect. I mean, his Apgar score was 9. He was drop-dead gorgeous. He was just fabulous, and I mean, the night he was born, I remember just staying up most of the night and just staring at him. I called my mom at like 1 in the morning because she had been there for the whole birth, and I was like, tell me everything. About the day. Like, I wanted to relive that day
mm-hmm.
over and over and over again. So we went home, and, you know, I was just starting this beautiful life with my beautiful son.
Mm-hmm.
And Topher was equally as happy, and everything seemed right. He was born 3.5 weeks early, so he was born a little small. He was just under 6 pounds,
mm-hmm.
which was normal for mm-hmm. 3.5 week early baby. And we would go checkups and everything was fine and everything seemed great. And then, but at 4 months, he was still just having a hard time. And we were doing supplements. I was breastfeeding. We were, the doctor, yeah, but you're small, your husband's small. Like, of mm-hmm. course, you're not going to have some, you know, big growing baby.
Right.
But at 4 months, I was like, I just feel like something is not right. And I didn't even, so I, when we went to the doctor, I asked my pediatrician, I was like, I want some blood work. And I mean, I'm so glad that I did. I said, you know, I want blood work. And he was like, well, you're going to have to go down to Children's because that's where babies go. And I'm like, it's fine.
Just bring it.
If you could just call the order right. in, that would be right. amazing. So we went to Children's, got some blood work done, and we expected to hear back sometime the following week. Well, Saturday morning, we get a call. This is when people still had home phones.
Mm-hmm.
And our home phone's ringing, and it was our pediatrician. And he said, hey, we got the blood work back, and Charlie's liver is failing. He's really sick. And we have already called Children's. They're ready for you. You need to pack a bag and head to the hospital.
Wow.
Charlie didn't look sick. Mm-hmm. He didn't act sick. Mm-hmm. You know, there was absolutely no physical indication other than he was small. And I remember when we checked in, I remember seeing the chart and it said failure to thrive. That's a diagnosis that I really wish would go away, right? Because that's a failure to thrive. That was not what was happening with my son.
No, mm-hmm. I think
can't
I
gain weight.
Right.
Liver failing.
Right.
Like, he is thriving.
Right.
You know. So we were in the hospital for 3.5 weeks with Charlie, doing every test under the sun, trying to figure out what was going on, and just no answers. I mean, no answers. He had every scan, test, blood test, X-ray, you know, sonogram, any MRIs, anything that he could do, we did. Mm-hmm. And nothing was telling us why his liver was failing. And so it was time to do a biopsy. And, you know, Charlie at this point maybe weighed 8.5 pounds. And so we were scared.
And he's 5 months old now, maybe? 4 or 5 months old?
Yeah, he's almost 5 months old now.
Okay.
And so he had surgery. It was about a 3 or 4 hour surgery, and they took a piece of his liver. And so then we waited, and a day or two later, not only did the doctors come in, but like, so Children's is a teaching hospital. I didn't even know what that meant. Teaching hospital, you know, they want to find those cases that are super rare. Mm-hmm. And so
like, here we are.
Yes. And so it was like the doctor and then 20 other doctors and people trying to be doctors and people, you know. Anyway, so we knew it was bad because this was rare. And so he came in and told us that Charlie had a metabolic disease. It's a metabolic disease called mitochondrial disease. And that there was very little treatment, no cure, and that Charlie was terminally ill and at some point was going to die from this. And I just started sobbing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just started weeping. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I talk about it in my book that it was really just not one of my finest moments because they all kind of shuffled out. And I remember one of the young residents or fellows or, you know, it's like, hey, have a good weekend. As he turns around and I screamed something really bad at him. Yeah. Because I just,
how can you
tell me to have a good weekend? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm never going to be okay again. Mm-hmm. You know, Charlie's dying. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that was just, if him being born was the best day of my life, that day finding out that he was going to die of a disease and suffer in the meantime because there's very little treatment and no cure. That was
heart-wrenching. I can't even fathom.
Yeah.
So that news.
Yeah.
So we went home and
can I ask, so in this moment, where are you with God with this? I can't even imagine wrestling that kind of information and really feeling strong about my faith. I just don't know where I would be with that to think, here I am, I'm on my third pregnancy. What do you mean we have a metabolic
devastation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I knew, it's a good question, it's a hard question. The only thing that I knew is that nothing on earth was going to save my son. Mm. There wasn't a cure, there wasn't a remedy, there wasn't a pill, there wasn't medicine. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I it makes sense why, you know, people have asked me 1,000 times, were you mad? Were you mad at God? Did you ever ask God why? I felt like that was wasting time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I had to work with, God was my only partner.
Right.
God was my only hope in something working because nothing on earth was going to work. Mm-hmm. So in that moment, I put all my eggs in that basket. Mm-hmm. And I would sit out on the back porch. I would read to Charlie. We would read all about the miracles. Mm-hmm. We would read those verses.
Beautiful.
You know, that if you have faith of this mustard seed, you can move that mountain. Mm-hmm. And we would read, I would read these aloud to Charlie. Mm-hmm. And then I'd pray. And I would tell Jesus, look, you said, if I knock, you will open. If mm-hmm. I will seek it, I will mm-hmm. find it. Mm-hmm. If, you know, if I ask, you're going to answer. Mm-hmm. And I believed that God could.
Yeah.
I did not believe. I did not know that he would. I believe mm-hmm. that he could. Mm-hmm. I did not know that he would.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I somehow reconciled that. I understand why people get mad at God. That was never a response of mine.
Mm-hmm.
At any point in it,
mm-hmm.
Charlie just kept getting sick. We had to eventually call hospice, mm-hmm. and you know, he died. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was terminally ill, mm-hmm. and August 31st of that year, he passed away. And just every mother's greatest fear is that something bad is going to happen to one of their children.
That is exactly every mother's greatest mm-hmm. fear.
It is their greatest fear.
Yeah.
And that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And to be frank, it was as scary as I imagined
it would be,
as you all are imagining it would be.
Yes.
To one, it felt like somebody ripped him mm-hmm. from me because mm-hmm. he was always in my arms. He never slept a night in his crib. He mm-hmm. never took a nap in a bouncy. Charlie was an extension of me.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened even before I knew he was sick. Mm-hmm. I just had such an appreciation for a healthy baby
and
in my arms.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so the sadness of his death was, I mean, just as bad mm-hmm. as you would think that it would
mm-hmm.
be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as bad as you would think. The worst thing in the world is a mother standing over a casket
mm-hmm.
of her
I can't even
child
imagine.
That
I can't.
Her child is
it's
in.
Not coming
yeah.
back.
I hate to say it right now, but I know we need to take a break. So let's take a break before we continue with your story, because there's you know, so much hope and so much redemption yet to come. But let's take a small break, and we will be right back on the Every Heart, Every Woman radio show.
Every heart, every woman. Every heart, every woman.
You're listening to Every Heart, Every Woman, the show where women find balance, peace, and inspiration.
Every heart,
now let's get
every
back to the
woman.
Show with your host, Carla Nivens.
Well, welcome back to the show, everyone. This is the Every Heart, Every Woman radio show on The Word 100.7 FM. We are talking with our good friend Tova Cito. And Tova has been sharing her story and sharing her testimony. We kind of left everybody in a cliffhanger there. So I'm ready to get back to the story. So, and I feel bad about saying story because this is like 150% true in your journey in life. But Charlie has just passed. Mm-hmm. And then what happens next?
So, Topher and I felt really irresponsible thinking about getting pregnant again, even though there was nothing we wanted more than to just continue to have a family.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't – there's several reasons why people are born with mitochondrial disease. The main and most popular way that you are born with mitochondrial disease is it's a genetic disease that the mother is the carrier. But that would have meant that I had it,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't have mitochondrial disease. So that was off the table. The second way that you can get it is a recessive gene that I carry, that you carry with your husband. So your husband's a carrier of it, I'm a carrier of it. And so that was a possibility. The third way that somebody can get it is just a sporadic genetic mutation, just a total fluke. And so there was a specialist in Seattle, Washington, who was a a genetic specialist for mitochondrial disease.
Okay.
And we had worked with the Mitochondrial Disease Foundation to find this guy, and he was fabulous. And so we went and met with him in Seattle and just sat down with him and said, why does this keep happening?
Mm-hmm.
Are these related? Is our first baby born with a heart condition? Is that related to Charlie with the liver? What about the miscarriage? And he said, I don't think any of them are related. And I don't think that, I mean, clearly you don't have mitochondrial disease. The chances of you and your husband both being carriers of this incredibly rare disease are so implausible. He gave it, I don't remember the number, but it was like one in millions, millions, mm-hmm. millions. And he said, I really just think this was a sporadic genetic mutation. And the chances of you having a healthy baby are very possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's exciting to hear.
Oh.
I would have been skipping out.
Yes. And I asked him, I said, so if you were me, you would have another baby. And he said, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the expert. So we went home and nothing, we weren't replacing,
right.
you know, anything, mm-hmm. but our dream was not dead. Mm-hmm. My dream mm-hmm. was not dead. And we prayerfully went about considering, should we get pregnant again?
Mm-hmm.
And we just felt strongly that the answer is yes. And so I got pregnant right away. Charlie passed away August 2003. In 2004, I gave birth to a daughter, Louisa, in November of 2004. And she was born a little bigger than Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
She gained weight immediately. She was just spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
And they did tests right away on her liver because they had said if she has mitochondrial disease, it'll show up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like all of a sudden one day her liver numbers are going to be elevated. Like, she will be born with elevated liver numbers. Her liver numbers were great. You know, we're high-fiving.
Yeah.
Take that baby home and mm-hmm. never look back.
Mm-hmm.
And she grew healthy and she was fat. She had fat thighs. I'd never seen fat thighs.
This little chunky monkey.
Chunky monkeys and just happy and growing and beautiful. And so fear was still a part of my days because
sure.
I was still scared, even though I felt very, very hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
So every morning, nobody knew, and I never even told Topher, I would strip down, get on my scale, weigh myself, and then I would strip Louisa down and pick her up and go stand on the scale.
Mm-hmm.
And for 4 months, that scale kept moving.
Mm-hmm.
Up, 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 up. And then one whole week went by where nothing changed.
Hmm.
And I just knew it, like in my gut.
Mm.
That's
devastating.
I just knew it. And I told Topher, I said, I think we need to get her tested. I think we need to check on her liver. And he was like, what are you talking about? Like, no, she's perfect. Look at her thighs. Look
right.
at that.
Right.
And I said, so I had to tell him what I had been doing. And so we call our pediatrician, ask for blood work, go to Children's, wait for the results, and sure enough, her liver numbers were starting to elevate. And so we just knew what
your time was limited and what was going to happen to her.
What was going to happen to her.
Tova.
Mm. And almost to the day.
Of knowing.
To almost to the day of the same length of time that Charlie was alive was the exact same, almost to the day that Charlie was alive. And it, I mean, it was just the demise. I hate that word,
mm-hmm.
but there's really no other word. It's just liver failure is not a pretty thing to watch. Mm. There was suffering. There was pain. There were a lot of tears,
mm-hmm.
and your child suffering. I mean, all you want to do is
get away,
get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, get rid of it. And but Louisa died in June of 2015. When she died, you know, Charlie, I still had that silver lining. I don't know. I just I had not lost hope. Mm-hmm. When Louisa died, there was a truth that we had to face, and the truth was, I was a carrier. Mm-hmm. Now we knew. Mm-hmm. I was a carrier. As rare as it was,
right.
Topher was a carrier. Mm-hmm. And the chances of us having a healthy baby were slim. And we were done. Mm-hmm. We couldn't put ourselves through this. We couldn't put another child mm-hmm. through this. Our families, mm-hmm. our friends.
Did you feel guilty about that, having Louisa? Oh, did you?
So guilty.
See, I think I would have made the same decision. If someone is telling me that, I think I would have been, all right, God, we're going to go for it one more time mm-hmm. and just pray that it was a fluke. Yeah. And I think for a moment I probably would feel a little selfish. But
I think I mother's
know.
Guilt it's, exists
yes.
on a good day.
Yes.
We blame ourselves for hangnails and yes. things right. that we can't
I got
control.
My kid got strep because right. I'm a bad mom.
Yes.
Right.
You know? Yes. Right. Yes.
Right.
I shouldn't have done that.
Right.
I shouldn't have taken him there.
Right.
I could have done it different if I had left. You know, everything is our fault anyway
mm-hmm.
on a good day.
Mm. That would
These children were sick because of a disease that I carried.
But mm-hmm. you didn't know.
I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not my fault.
Right. Exactly.
This is that we live in a world where people get sick
mm-hmm.
and it was not my fault. And even though my mind and my, intelligence says this is clearly, you would never wish this for your children. It just really felt like my fault. And the despair, the hopelessness, the heartache, in my book, I say, grief, sadness, it became my roommate.
Mm-hmm.
And I contemplated suicide. The only reason I didn't commit suicide was I was afraid. I didn't know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to leave Topher.
Mm-hmm.
I knew what it felt like to be left behind.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't want to do that to him or anybody else. We had been through so much. But getting up felt miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Getting up felt miserable. And I had always been a joyful, hopeful.
Yes, right. You are now.
Right. Yes.
I mean, you are that person. That
but
is who
I was
you are.
Not.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that I could do was, the Sparkman Hillcrest is where my children are buried. The only thing that I could do was wake up every day and walk to Sparkman Hillcrest.
Mm.
And I would sit at their grave. I didn't know what else to do.
Mm-hmm.
That was where my children were, and I was their mom.
Right.
And even though I knew they really weren't there, it's the closest that I could physically get to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only thing that made sense. But after a couple of months, I knew that that was not something that I could
do the rest of your life.
Could
you couldn't go every single day and sit there. Though, I can't imagine not doing that, honestly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so, I had to find a way out of this because I wasn't going to die. I had to live. So how was I going to get out?
How do you live with this? Mm-hmm.
And I had my faith journey had certainly, I don't know what, increased? What's mm-hmm. the word? grown.
Maybe it's grown.
Grown.
It's more mature now.
It was more.
Needed him more.
Yeah, I needed him more. And so I went to talk to my pastor. And I asked him, how do I get out of this? And I told him everything that had happened and da da da. And when I was done talking, he looked at me and he said, okay, so are you done? And I said, yes, I'm done. And he said, well, what are you going to do now, Tova? And I said, I don't know. That's why I'm here. And mm-hmm. so, then I expected the Bible to come out.
Right.
And prayers to, well, let's
pray over you.
I'm going to lay hands on you and we're going to figure this out. And I'm going to just wait for God to tell us what's next. And he did not. He said, well, what do you want to do? I said, I want to be a mom. And he said, well, that dream is over and that's not going to happen. And God did not put you on this earth to sit around and cry about your dead children.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Talk about a wake up.
Yeah.
You could go either way. You could get really mad and tell them what you really think and walk out the door, or you sit and you just listen and sit in how
right.
that feels.
I don't even know how I would respond.
I don't either.
Had I not respected him immensely,
mm-hmm.
I would have told anybody else except that man where to go.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I really would have.
Okay.
He so much had my respect that he was the only one. And I really believe God knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that God orchestrated that moment. And in that moment, he hired me to come work at the church.
Well, it was really almost like a light switch because it opened the door. I mean, in your book, you talk a little bit about what that experience is. And I don't mean to laugh.
Oh,
but
it was
interesting to hear what happened for, 6 months after or a year when you were hired. And I don't remember the lady's name, but the person that just basically let you be you.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that's so beautiful.
She was paid to collect my tears.
Yes, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. Yes.
She was. I mean, she was just an angel. But that was the beginning of...
You're not at the cemetery.
Yeah.
You're not at home. At least you're there.
Yeah.
You're somewhere else.
I was safe.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody knew me.
Mm.
Nobody knew me. Nobody knew my story. So I would walk down the hall. Nobody... When you have lost anyone, but when you have especially lost a child, people are looking at you like, how...
There's a pity almost.
There's, right. Oh.
And then nobody knows what to say.
Nobody knows. And then if you're smiling or you're laughing for a second, not only do you feel inappropriate, but they're looking at you like, how can she be smiling?
Right.
She just buried her son.
Right. Mm-hmm.
She just buried her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this feeling like, you can't go on. You feel like you can't go on, but the world's looking at you like you shouldn't go on.
Mm-hmm.
How could you go on?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so there was no expectations for who Tova Cito should be or how she should be behaving. So I could go to the church and just escape and kind of reinvent, not reinvent, but just be, just be.
It's a gift. That was a gift that didn't look like one at the time, but I think that sounded like such a wonderful gift that you received.
Yeah. And so over the next 10 years, I worked at the church, and that, it was the beginning of so many things when I started, the beginning of healing, the beginning of hope, the beginning of God showing me that this was a part of my story. This is a big part of my story, but this was not the end of my story. And I think that's when it really becomes, you're really figuring out what you're made of.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, I can only imagine.
You really are.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was given another opportunity at life and what God would do. I could not have imagined in those moments of grief and despair and hopelessness that God could ever use me.
Right.
Mm. And that I or that I would ever get over my pain. I was recently interviewed by someone who said, I'm sure there's still days of great sadness and great. And I was like, nope.
The Lord has healed.
That's right.
The Lord has taken away my pain.
Mm-hmm.
I look at all of those things that happened, all of those days, all of that hopelessness, and none of it exists. The only feelings that I have around my children are total and pure joy and gratitude.
And that can only come from no one else but the Lord.
It's true.
No one else.
It's true.
So through the church and your work at the church, I know that the Lord has added so much to your life.
Yeah.
And also added the opportunity for you to be a mom.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, in 2009, I went to Africa with a friend to work in an orphanage. I did not go there to adopt children.
Mm-hmm.
We had taken adoption. We had taken children off the table. Mm-hmm. I really thought if they got a cold, I wouldn't be able. The anxiety,
sure,
of
like
a
almost
cold,
post-traumatic stress.
Yes, I just I couldn't take
sure.
it.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And but I saw three children in an orphanage. There were 73 children, and I saw these three that just. I knew. I mean, it was like I saw them and the heavens open and the choir sang.
Aww.
And it was like, oh, you know, yeah. And I called my husband. I said, we have three children in Africa. And he was like, you need to come home. Just get home. And
this was Ghana.
This
correct?
Was Ghana, 2009. And then and I went home and he said, 1 month. You have 1 month. You have to wait. Before we talk about this, so 1 month, I ordered Mexican food. We sat up in our kitchen, and I said, okay, it's been a month. And a year later, they were home. And so now they're all biological. Mm-hmm. I have twins that are now 14, and George is my youngest. He's almost 13. When I adopted them, they were 6, 6, and 5.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, you want to talk about God redeeming.
Yes.
I could have never seen it coming. I didn't even ask for it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't hoping for it. Mm-hmm. I did not want it, but the way that God has restored the joy in my home.
I was going to say, I know there's a lot of joy from the limited time I've been around the kids and just watching you interact, but even like at Vacation Bible School one year, I was helping lead and just seeing the joy in them. And they don't look like everybody else.
Mm-mm.
And they know that, but they don't know that. Does that
right.
make sense?
Oh, yeah.
And it was just so fun to see. It just made me so happy that they could just go. I mean, it's a testament to you as a parent, Tova.
Oh, thank
but
you.
It's such a gift from God too, and
yeah, it is.
They're just so joyful and happy. And but you're that person too, and you're having that opportunity to share that joy with them.
Yeah.
And
you know, they needed a mom, and I needed kids, mm-hmm. and so we were an answered prayer mm-hmm. for each other. And I don't think we ever take that for granted.
Yeah,
I know I don't, and yeah. I really don't think they do. And I think that adds to our joy. You know, our joy goes away because we forget.
Mm-hmm.
We forget how blessed we are in this moment.
Yes.
We get caught up in the worldly stuff.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to not listen.
It steals our joy.
It does. It steals our joy. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. This, Tova, I mean,
we could go on and on.
We could go on and on and on. So
well, just have me back.
We're going to have to have you back and go through the rest of your journey. And I just want to, because I know your story and have been at women's retreats when you have spoken before. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you're just always so lovely. I wish everyone could see
Carla.
You right now, and just the joy of the Lord just shines.
It does.
Off,
it exudes
off
out of her.
Of mm-hmm. you and off of your life.
That
and
is so, such a, if anybody could say anything about me, that is like the greatest compliment that I could ever be given. So that, thank you, and praise be to God. That,
amen.
Because it is only because of him
amen.
that exists.
Amen. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
So thank you again for being here. And I just pray that everyone just finds that encouragement that they need, and I'm sure they will, through your story, that when you go through times of just hopelessness, look to the Lord. I always say, look in the other direction.
Yeah,
right.
It's a great
look to the Lord to do something great and like sweep through and redeem it all, because
yeah.
that's just who the Lord is. So Tova, let everyone know that's listening how they can get in touch with you
buy
and follow
book.
You and buy your book.
Mm-hmm. Of course. So one thing I want to say to what you said, because I couldn't agree with it more, about what the Lord can do
mm-hmm.
if we let him.
Yes.
Mm.
If we let him.
Yes.
We
open
have
heart.
To be open to mm-hmm. what the Lord can do.
Yes.
We have to be ready to move away from mm-hmm. our pain. So you can contact me. It's easy peasy.
Okay.
You can find me on my website, www.tovasido.com, TOVASIDO. You can buy my books there. I have a couple devotional books. And then my last book, Borrowed Courage. I do speaking events and women's retreats, as
yes.
you said. It's my favorite women's ministry stuff. So, or you can find me on Instagram. Contact me there. And I love hearing women's stories. I love sharing people's stories. I love giving people hope in the midst of their pain.
Yes.
And so I would welcome anyone who wants to reach out.
Yeah. You are a blessing. Thank you, Tova.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
And thank you all for tuning in to Every Heart, Every Woman radio show on The Word, 100.7 FM. Our show is a ministry of Love Ministries, which is a 501c3 nonprofit. Thank you so much, Vicki McMurray.
Thank you.
For being here with me. I appreciate your friendship so much. Everyone, we will see you back next week, next Sunday at 6 p.m. on The Word, 100.7 FM. Have a wonderful week.
Every heart.